I can assure you, no training prepared me for what I was going to get on the ground when I was transferred to Soroti Hospital here. This is in a rural setting, about 6 hours drive from Kampala.
Hello and welcome to the Swedish Vascular Podcast with me, Anton Axelsson. Today's guest is Dr. Mary Margaret Aiko. She is a Catholic nun and a general surgeon with a special interest in pediatric surgery. She is one of the first surgeons in Uganda to complete her PhD with the title Pediatric Surgery in Uganda, Burden of Disease and Barriers to Quality of Care, which was completed together with the Karolinska Institute under the supervision of Jenny Löfgren in the Global Surgery Group. Today, she is one of three senior consultants in the surgery at the regional hospital in Soroti. She is part of numerous international collaborations and continues her research to create a voice for those who can't speak for themselves. Welcome to the Swedish Vascular Podcast, Sister Margaret. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. Would you mind starting by just telling a little bit about the story of your upbringing and how you ended up in medicine?
Well, I belong to a family of 7 children, and all of us are girls born to agricultural officer, a scientist, who is unfortunately is now late, but is one of the key people who educated us, the girls, against the culture, usually which takes place in Africa. Girls' education is not paramount. So my father is one of the few Africans who went against the culture to educate us. And I'm so proud about that. So I started my school here in Soroti. From the primary school, that is the first level of 7 classes. Then I went to high school in Gulu, Sacred Heart, 4 classes, that is up to 10th grade. Then I did I went now to the convent to become a nun. I went out of school for 3 years, then before I returned back to do my grade 11 and 12. And then I emerged with very good results to go and do medicine at Makerere University in Uganda. In fact, Makerere is considered to be one of the Harvard of Uganda, the Harvard of Africa. It was one of those very reputable universities in Africa. So what really made me interested in doing medicine started right when I was in my high school in Sacred Heart. I studied in a missionary school that was led by nuns, and they introduced to us other, beside academics, we also had the other curriculums, like going to look after the sick and going to pray. That's even what made me become a nun. I got so inspired. But treating the sick, I realized that the sick are very vulnerable. And they need a lot of attention, a lot of love. They need timely care. And I told myself, when I grow up, I want to be a doctor so that I can help these people. It was through these activities that we used to do as students in Sacred Heart. It was called the Young Christian Students, which was just a movement to humanitarian, I would say. And it looked more to the vulnerable people. So I went now to, when I passed to go to the university, I did medicine for 5 years at Makerere University. And then I did my internship in Zambia Hospital. So it's a very big hospital in Kampala for 1 year. After which, now I joined the public service as a medical officer, general doctor. So my first posting was at St. Joseph's Hospital, Kitovu, that's in southern Uganda, Masaka. So I worked there for 3 years. before going back to Makerere to do surgery. In fact, what really prompted me to become a surgeon was that my mentor, my teacher, the head of department, was a nun called Dr. Maura Lynch. She was a general surgeon and she was an Irish nun. She had a passion for surgery and she taught it with passion. And I remember we would always do the ward rounds together, go to operating theater together, and she would teach us all types of surgery, including doing postmortem. And I remember we could do all cases, beginning orthopedic cases, chronic key, osteomyelitis, head injuries. That hospital was on a highway, and many patients were admitted with head injuries. So I learned to do practically craniotomies, evacuating subdural hematomas, extradural hematomas, and fixing other cases. So before that, in fact, because of routinely doing those cases, I loved surgery because the results are instant. Someone comes very sick, you operate, and it's almost straightforward. A patient recovers if it is not badly injured or if reports early. Unlike medicine, where you have to have a dilemma in knowing what is wrong, correct, you have to guess. I don't like medicine because they do so many unnecessary investigations. You do CBC, you do liver function tests, you do renal function tests. They may ask you to do other rare conditions. You're just looking for the diagnosis. Whereas surgery, it is instant. So I love surgery. No wonder I was able to return to do my M.Med. surgery again in Makerere University. That was when, in fact, when I got the interest to go and do surgery. And I did surgery for 3 years. And I became a surgeon, general surgeon.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting to hear that. And it sounds like your work as a nun has complemented your work in medicine, and also that your work in medicine kind of complements your work as a nun.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's also, I think, fun to hear that the importance of mentors and people inspiring you to move forward in your career is quite global, because in our earlier episodes, there have been similar stories. People meet older, more senior colleagues who are passionate about what they do, and then they inspire the younger generations to continue in their footsteps a little bit. So, you decided to go into general surgery because of your passionate mentor.
I liked general surgery.
Yeah,
because in fact, when you manage patients, their results are always very good, and cases are straightforward. They are not like in medicine, as I told you before, where there's a lot of coughing, guesswork, and you treat a different condition, and again you realize you. So I love surgery.
Yeah. Mm. How come you chose to specialize or at least focus on pediatric surgery?
So pediatric surgery, I can assure you, no training prepared me for what I was going to get on the ground when I was transferred to Soroti Hospital here. This is in a rural setting, about 6 hours drive from Kampala. And I got a shock when I reached here because, first of all, nobody teaches you in the university, nobody prepares you to see really what is practically on the ground. So when I came here to Soroti Regional Referral Hospital, I found so many children needing surgery and waiting for surgery, and they were not getting. In the wards, mothers will be admitted with their children maybe only needing a neurophy. Others had hash browns. Others had colostomies. And you know, a child with a colostomy is bad news. because in Uganda here we don't have colostomy bags. So these children continue discharging stool at all times and they are soiled. So these mothers, because of the social economy, they can't buy soap all the time to wash clothes. They come and they leave their homes because they're almost like outcasts. Because the society out there sometimes condemns them that these children are abnormal. They have a hand in it. They are responsible. So they come and live in a hospital here, waiting for the doctors to perform miracles to cure their children. So they will wait for a week. They go back home. They wait. So I really took interest in children. Mm. At that point, I decided I must speak for this voiceless and make this condition known and find a remedy. Not me alone, but the good thing is that I found the doctors here were very, very flexible and we formed a team quickly. And no wonder we started having the surgical camps with the other teams I had already before, from the University of British Columbia, Yale University, how to get surgeons, from Makere University. So we started forming these groups of surgeons and having surgical camps. But then I realized that every time we did a surgical camp, the numbers of children kept on increasing. Not only did they come locally from around, they would travel for miles. Others come from Western Uganda, others come from Northern Uganda, others even discharged themselves from Lago National Referral Hospital and came back to Soroti to have these surgeries. So that's when I realized that this burden of pediatric surgery is quite a lot. Yeah? So actually it was because of this that I realized that after we had a surgical camps, about 8 surgical camps, and every time the numbers became bigger and bigger. And the worst thing, yes, the camp is good because you interact with many surgeons, you get transfer of skills, even as students who are around, there's a lot they learn during the surgical camp. But after the surgical camp, patients will continue coming in bigger numbers, which was overwhelming for me because I wouldn't manage now these numbers that they would come. And you can't send them away, they want to be there. They actually become now a burden. So that was really what made me now decide to do my PhD. So that with evidence, with data, you can explain to the policymakers how big this problem is. And together we see what can be done. Because it's a big problem in the country.
Have you seen any changes in the surgical care of children since you started?
Yes, because now in a surgical outpatient, we have a book for booking for children. And every week, at least we have 3 children assured will be put on the list to get surgery. And sometimes we get even as many, if it is hernias, it can even be as many as 5, and then other conditions. So now children are also being put on the list for surgery.
That's good to hear.
Yes, yeah. I'm happy.
And seeing that when you came here, there was comparing like your experience and maybe the lack of pediatric surgery, would you say that the interest for pediatric surgery has increased since you started?
Yes, especially after the presentation of my thesis, because many people watched it online. Many doctors, you know, you can just know of a problem, but if you have not known the magnitude or the data about that problem, you will just hear and ignore. But when you hear, it catches eye. That it was a big information that I gave to the public, and no wonder I got a big number of calls from other doctors. We also want to become pediatric surgeons. How can we join them? How can we be trained? How can you advocate for us so that we can get training and join in the fight for making children be able to have access surgery? And others would also ask, we also want to do PhD, show us the way. Because as I speak now, we are only 2 general surgeons who have PhD in the entire Uganda. And I'm the first doctor to have a PhD in pediatric surgery in Uganda.
Yeah.
And It shows that most times we, the surgeons, we are really buried in the operating theater. We don't speak about the problems that we meet. I think it is a high time that surgeons should do research, publicize their work, create awareness to the community. We always make statements that a global health, a surgery is a stepson or stepdaughter, name it, and a children is a forgotten discipline. But if we cannot talk, who will know about it? Let's see what the public health people have done. They have advertised malaria, they have advertised HIV, they have advertised TB, to the point that everyone knows, even up to the grassroots, people are aware. So unless we also come with an approach, then we'll be able to create awareness and create an impact to the community that we live or serve.
Yeah. Perhaps you could speak a few minutes about your research and the projects you did here. What was your main findings in your projects?
So I did four projects. The first one, I looked at the prevalence of these surgical conditions. And then I looked at the burden of this disease. And then I looked at the barriers and then what potential solutions can be devised so that this problem can be mitigated. And then, of course, the last research, I looked at the effect of COVID-19 on access to surgery by the children. So all in all, I found that the burden of disease is quite very big. We have a big population of children. We have many conditions, mainly congenital leading and infections and trauma. And then also I found that the surgical conditions, the distribution of doctors, much as the population is largely 80% of the people live in a rural setting, you find that the doctors, almost 95%, are concentrated in the center. So there should be a way that more doctors are trained, but they should be distributed equally throughout the country. Doctors, nurses, let's say teams dedicated, anesthesiologists, they should be distributed in all the four regions. There is an imbalance at the moment, such that children in the other regions don't access surgery timely. Yes? And then also, we realize that there are no dedicated hospitals for pediatric surgery. This also have to be built. There were suggestions that all the regional referral hospitals are spread throughout the country. So the surgical discipline for children should all be made available in the regional referral hospitals. And then, of course, equipping them. We find that in the entire Uganda, there are only two hospitals who have the operating theaters built specifically for children. That is Mulago National Referral Hospital. Naguru has one. Okay, yes, Mbarara also has one. But the rest, children are operated in the ordinary theater where there are no equipment dedicated for children. So all these areas have to be looked through. Mm. Yes, we have to have good access to surgery by children.
What would you say are like the main challenges of performing research in Uganda?
Okay, challenges, first of all, I would say, with the research, I didn't have many challenges, but then the biggest challenge people have is maybe getting the proper mentorship or getting the right topics to do, and then funding so that you are able to move to different parts of the country and correct maybe the research. And I think most of it also lack of will. If someone has passion to do something, I think you'll overcome all these boundaries.
Okay, and looking forward, like what would you say are the main challenges in healthcare for children in Uganda?
First of all, the biggest problem we have, first of all, we know that Uganda is largely a young population, and we've seen more than 50% are children. But the biggest barrier we have is the workforce, the human workforce. We have about 10 now pediatric surgeons in the entire country, which would really require about 200 pediatric surgeons. And those are still surgeons. We don't have dedicated pediatric nurses, pediatric anesthesiologists, rehabilitation teams. So the biggest challenge is human resource. All these people need to be trained. Actually, we need to have training. And then that is human resource. Then equipment. First of all, you need to have buildings that are theaters, operating theaters built throughout the country, dedicated for children, for surgery. And then equipped with equipment which are for children. You can't use a big laryngoscope for intubating a small baby. Yes, that is what is happening. Improvisation is the order of the day. So we need dedicated theaters, equipment, drugs. We all know that children are not young adults. Yes, their physiology, their anatomy varies. So they have to have special instruments to be used. And then, of course, the constant supply of sundries, medicines. If these are in place, then we can be able to treat the children surgically. And there should be training as well. It should be on a growing process. People should have CMEs, continuous training in management of their children's conditions. So I think if all these are in place, then we shall be able to at least manage a number of children who have surgical conditions. Because children are going to continue being born with congenital abnormalities. This is not a problem. I mean, this is a problem which is continuous. And then also, I think we need to do a follow-up research, and especially on the prevention aspect of surgical conditions. There are preventable conditions. Yes, you may notice if you stay here until June, you'll see an epidemic of children falling from mango trees. Children here like climbing on the mango trees. So they fall, they have head injuries, they have ruptured spleens. In Uganda here, most of the children have big spleens because of malaria pandemics, epidemics that we have. So, of course, we are prone to get children suffer from malaria, so the spleens are enlarged, plus other tropical conditions, they make the spleen large. So a trivial fall makes it a rupture. And if there's no timely surgery, they die. So we need all these preventive measures. Maybe there could be maybe a program on how to pick mangoes maybe for children, stop children climbing trees and so on. We can look for other practical examples so that we can prevented conditions should be prevented.
Yeah. And if we look at the work in the clinics today and with the presumptions present, how would you say it's manifested in the clinic? Like, do you have any examples of like patients more than perhaps the kids climbing in the mango trees? Are there any other problems you face that are very prominent?
The commonest surgical conditions in children are congenital.
Oh.
If you just even dedicate yourself to doing aneotomies, you can't finish them. There are so many. Just announce now, you'll get about 100 cases coming. And then you talk about, the other conditions, they may not be common, but they are really very debilitating, like Hirschsprung's. It's a disease which you need really experts to manage. And because it's managing in stages, and it has a very big impact. If a child has a colostomy, drops out of school, it's a big social problem at home. Actually, that child is almost like an outcast. So such conditions should be managed timely to avoid this stigmatization.
Since you started your work in Soroti, what would you say are the things you're most proud of?
There are many successful stories that we talk about. Like many children have accessed surgery, Here in Soroti, for example, we separated the conjoined twins,
mm-hmm.
and it became actually, I would say, a national song up to today, up to tomorrow. And they were given a golden awards by the president of the country. In Soroti here, we also separated, I think, the first living intrahepatic gestation. In fact, when the literature we read around is that in other countries, they terminate their pregnancy when they realize it is maybe intrahepatic. But here, we are able to deliver a lady at 36 weeks. This is a lady who presented with a big liver, enlarged liver, and she was being treated medically. That's a medical condition. But when she had a scan here in Soroti, recognized that there was a viable fetus in the liver. So we gave this lady complete bed rest, and then we organized our teams to deliver her. There was a team of surgeons and obstetricians, and we delivered live baby girl who is, I think she's now about 5 years. Yes, so we were happy that we were able to manage. It was not an easy one, especially controlling bleeding of the liver after. We had to do damage control. And eventually we went back, took a mop, and the lady survived. We gave her some drugs. Yes. The aim was not to remove the placenta because that would even create more bleeding.
Mm.
Yes. So it was anchored in the liver. But we gave her drugs.
That's...
And it was one of, and if you go on the internet, you can read about that. And then of course now that we have also partners, we've partnered with, collaborated with many people in areas of pediatric surgery. So we are also having children being referred to us with the pediatric surgery, for pediatric surgery. And we do them here with my colleagues. Others come from National Referral Hospital back to our little setting here. And we manage them. Yes. And then, of course, I've been invited to give a number of CMEs in the Uganda Medical Association, even here within the region, about pediatric surgery. Yes.
Yeah.
So those are some of the achievements. And of course, we are continuing with the research, because right now I'm doing a research on the prevalence of burns and what would be the remedy for these burns. In the aim of, we want to get answers from the parents and so now, so that together we shall make a drive for prevention for burns in children. So this is another research which I'm doing now. Then, of course, on trauma.
Mm.
And then the one that I would really love to do is about congenital at a higher level when I get funding and so on. We'd love to do genetical engineering, find out where are these people getting these babies.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite fantastic to hear about all the things you're doing and continuing to do.
Mm.
We usually end up by asking, as a surgeon, the workload can be very high, and with areas of responsibility also reaching outside of the hospital and outside of the clinic walls, it can easily become a quite strenuous everyday life.
It is.
Mm-hmm. But if you have the possibility of leaving the clinic in time on a Friday or even a little bit earlier than you thought, is there anything specific you like to do on your free time?
Ah, my free time, that's nice. I like also doing sports.
Okay.
Yes, and I love reading.
Mm-hmm.
Just reading not only medical stuff, also other stuff. And I love meeting young children, talking with them, joking with them, playing with them. And yes, interacting with them, and you get a lot of information by talking to young children. They
yeah.
tell you quite their aspirations, what they want to do, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm a nun, so other times prayer, staying with my other sisters, discussing issues out of medicine. And then weekends, I go to the garden. I do garden work. We plant cassava, plant potatoes, sweet potatoes, I plant maize. So in my other time, weekend especially, my life is very enjoyable, not boring, not all the time in the enclosure of theater. Yes, I have a life to live.
Yeah. what kind of sports?
I'm very poor at running. I play volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but then just aerobics.
Yeah.
So that I'm fit.
Yeah.
So I'm aging. So nice. I'm now aging, and I need to keep fit.
Do you have any books that you've read lately that you want to recommend to the listeners?
The recent one that I read was about most of them are religious books. That The Life of Jesus Christ. But also the recent book I read was The Final Diagnosis. It was very interesting, written by a pathologist.
Oh, okay.
You can get it and read it. It's quite interesting what other people, the late comers to health, think about. They feel that they are the ultimate, I think the final people to tell us what the idiots missed that led to the death of the patient. So it's quite very interesting to also see their opinion.
Sister Margaret, thank you so much for the work that you do, for being on the podcast, and for your continuous work, and for inspiring the next generation, just as maybe you were inspired by your senior general surgeons. I think that is a great ending of this episode, and thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for getting time to talk to me.